there. This is the A Lot To Say podcast, a conversation-based project focused on unconventional career paths and the projects that consume us. I'm your host, Gary Williams, or Gaz, as many call me. And A Lot To Say is part of the Alt Projects family of content, obsessing about the overlap between creativity, technology, and culture. I'm fortunate to spend my days working alongside technologists, artists, researchers, and people who just generally give a damn about the world we live in. And I'm very lucky to be able to hear of some incredible career journeys over that time from some really inspiring people. So I am particularly energized by the projects that I hear people are experimenting and tinkering on along the way. And I thought, you know what, it's time to put these stories out there with the A Lot To Say podcast project. I can't wait for you to hopefully discover some new and lesser known stories about the things people get wrapped up in and what led them to this point. This is A Lot To Say. Here we are for episode 5 of the Lot To Say podcast, and I'm joined by Kayleen Langford. She's the founder of Startup Creative, and professionally, who is she? Well, she's an expert in bringing people, ideas, and resources together. She's established a reputation for empowering individuals, to harness their passion, create viable businesses, and ensure they thrive. And she draws on her diverse experience and global perspective to encourage clients and audiences to explore non-traditional pathways to achieving their goals, giving them the tools and support they need along the journey. So that's a formal way of saying that, it's a perfect fit for, you know, this podcast's theme or direction of unconventional career paths. And she'll dive into some of those personal factors of paths she followed and how she's ended up where she is today. Startup Creative has evolved from a coaching and education provider to an all-encompassing ecosystem that helps individuals bring their dreams to life in a practical, sustainable manner. She's launched a Startup Creative magazine, which has a global distribution network of over 15,000 and is stocked in business class lounges and boutique hotels all around the world. She's built a subscriber database and engaged social media community of over 100,000 followers and coached more than 500 clients. Her podcast is listed amongst Apple's top 200 business podcasts as well, no small feat. And with her characteristic energy, she's expanded and set up the Startup Creative Coaching Academy and Startup Squad mentoring and training portal. So a bit of a force, but it's probably also her approach and I guess really consistent manner, which I was really interested to dive into because she's utterly tenacious and loves being explained as so. How do I know Kayleen? Only for a short while. It's funny how well we've gelled in that time, and I thoroughly enjoy hanging out with her. We've actually collaborated on a couple of things up until now, a few events and whatnot. But she'd actually just relocated to Melbourne. This might have been mid 2018, possibly, if I remember right. Myself and Josh Lipscomb, who was on episode 0 of the Lot To Say podcast, we run the event Fuck Up Nights in Melbourne and Sydney, and we were running one in Melbourne a few nights later. I heard she was in town. We needed a speaker. I pinged her, and she was up for it straight away. I was like, okay, cool. So we locked her in, got her on the stage in front of, 200 to 300 people at the Commons in Collingwood, a room full of strangers that she doesn't know, and but some certainly knew her and had followed along her journey, and were really rapt to hear her personal story in person. And she just like with everything, with reckless abandon, just got up on the stage and told a very raw and honest story about her journey, her thoughts on leadership and life, and won many fans in the process. So instantly admired what she was about as soon as we saw that in person. So I won't labor the point too much because we do dive into where she sort of come from, her journey, living a little bit of a nomadic lifestyle as well, both throughout Australia and around the world, putting these projects out into the public sphere, but also her capacity for coaching and what she gets from interacting with people. The really cool part, we'll dive on into it a little bit, but me approaching her for this podcast even resulted in her mum pulling out report cards for her to reminisce a little bit on her life. So I find that's, you know, a really sweet byproduct of asking people to participate in this, where they can reflect on their life a little bit and envision that journey along the way. Anyway, enough rambling from me. This is episode 5 of A Lot To Say podcast with Kayleen Langford. Thanks for joining.
All right, Kayleen, thanks for joining us on A Lot To Say podcast. Really pleased to have you here. We've gotten to know each other a little bit since you came down to Melbourne and set up base there, but we'll dig into that a little bit. But what are you doing at the moment, and what is Startup Creative inherently? What takes up your day-to-day?
Amazing. Thanks for having me. It's fun. This is going to be a good topic. I'm looking forward to it. I run Startup Creative, so I may run a print publication, online platform, podcast. I'm writing a book at the moment. I do one-on-one business coaching events, workshops, and my passion is helping people to start their own businesses doing what they love. So whatever that looks like, whether it's resources, advice, on lots of different mediums, and helping to inspire people to take control of their lives and do what they want to do, rather than just like get sucked up in the trance of 9 to 5 or whatever it is that they might not be enjoying.
That's right. Well, look, I know we're going to cover off a number of things today, and maybe some unexpected things for the audience. I mean, we'll touch on aspects of mindfulness, which you've incorporated into your life. Obviously, a largely nomadic lifestyle. So you're in Melbourne, well, at the moment, but actually, funnily enough, you're elsewhere right now recording this. And also, I guess, that massive sort of interpersonal aspect of your life mixed with huge degrees of storytelling. So I would imagine you've told your story in various fashions numerous times, but I've been pleased enough to have you on some of our events, including Fuck Up Nights over the last few years, which is really, really cool, and I love seeing how the audience responds to it. But before talking about all this that's going on at the moment, what was your upbringing like? Where did you originate from, and how have you sort of found your way to Melbourne?
Yeah, cool. It's been a long and windy journey. I was actually born in North Queensland in Innisfail. My parents were managing a pub there, actually. So my sister and I grew up there for the first 3 or 4 years. Eventually they moved, they sold that, got out of the pub industry and moved to the Sunshine Coast. So that Southeast Queensland. We grew up going to a little Catholic school up there. When mum was a full atheist, actually, and dad had been to Catholic boarding school and, you know, was an altar boy and all of that. And when it came to schooling, he said to mum, I want to send the kids to a Catholic school. And mum was like, no way, the Catholics are a joke. Like, absolutely not. And then dad said, please just go talk to the priest so we can baptize them and get them into the school. And mum came home from the conversation with the priest and said, yep, I'll do it. So she got baptized, we got baptized, mum threw herself into the church. And so we were very involved in the community. My dad at the time was on the Chamber of Commerce. He was working, volunteering once a week at the men's shelter that housed homeless men and men who'd just come out of prison. My mum set up a bunch of volunteering and community service organisations through the church and the school. So I grew up very embedded in our community. We were in Nambour on the Sunshine Coast, which growing up I hated it and thought it was a bit of a hole, and it didn't have the best reputation because it was where all the social services were based and attracted a lot of homelessness and a little bit of roughness here and there. Yeah. But my parents were on the front line of backing Nambour and helping those people and making them, you know, members of the society that weren't looked down on. So that was my upbringing. We were, you know, we knew on Friday nights, dad was at the men's shelter. On Christmas morning, he'd drive, one of us would get to go with him, and he would drive around town and pick up all the homeless men and take them up to the shelter for a Christmas lunch. We were delivering Easter eggs to the elderly people who didn't have relatives at nursing homes at Easter time. Yeah, we were always, mum and dad were always up to something, and we just went along with it.
and it sounds like, I mean, there's some parallels to now. not so much related to the community service aspect, but definitely around being surrounded by people at all times. And I know you yourself are always surrounded by people in different environments through where your work takes you or natural curiosity. But it sounds like they've ingrained that into you, that, you know, there's ways of getting involved in the community, but obviously your curiosity leads to, would have led to, I guess, developing more of your own identity as you led out through schooling. How's that sort of manifest as you through sort of primary and high school and then seek to enter the workforce and find your own thing that you did?
Yeah, I think the common thread with it was that both my parents were leaders. Like, they were able to have an idea and pull together resources and community and buckets of money and, you know, and lead an idea and make it something that other people would get on board with. Yep. And so in school, I was always signing up for the SRC or your Student Representative Council. I was the leader of the sporting team. I signed up for every sporting thing I could get my hands on. I loved sport. And then, so I did a lot of sport and a lot of leadership roles in school, and guess I naturally thrived in those environments. I was on the student council in our local area. And then as I've grown up, that's evolved to sitting on, you know, advisory panels. And even now, like with Startup Creative, that I remember somebody asking me, like, why do you help people? Like, why do you care so much about these people and, you know, changing their lives? And I think when I reflected on that, it was like, yes, I get paid to do what I do now, but I still always try to contribute my services for free when people can't afford it, or, you know, donate it here and there, or, you know, put on events, things like that. So yeah, I guess there is a underlying family trait. And like, my older sister runs a soup kitchen for homeless people. My little sister runs a Faith on Tap, where they pull together young people in their church. And I'm not in the church space at all. Like, well, I'm sure we'll get to that. But there was a common theme of, like, you help people. If somebody asks for help, you do that. It's no questions asked.
Yeah. I mean, you obviously have that sort of family connection with the church, and you reference that you're not quite involved with it now. But interestingly, we were speaking just beforehand, and you were mentioning less about the fact that you were involved in the church and more about how you approached it as a character trait, which is inherent in everything else you do. So I guess a fair amount of intention or determination. So did you want to talk through a little bit of that? Because you sounds like you got involved with a head full of steam and went straight.
Yeah. My mum always says, I worry about you, Kayleen. Like, you do things to the extreme. Yeah. And I definitely do. Like, growing up, I was, you know, doing a lot of sport. I was in team sports, but I wasn't the best. Like, I was the angry captain that was like, be better, and getting mad at people. And then I ended up probably specializing more in individual sports. So I did long distance running, and I was living in Queensland, obviously. I ran for Queensland at the national level every year in athletics and cross country. And I competed in Nippers, surf life saving. Yep. At the same level. So when I had that individual goal and target, I would, you know, it was like no one could hold me back, and it was only up to me. So some level of determination and self-responsibility.
Yeah.
So that took me up until, like, that was my sole drive. You know, I was the person that didn't go to schoolies because I was training for nationals that was going to be after schoolies. So I went up one night and had a blowout night, but then I had to be at training at 6 a.m. the next day. And so very, like, tunnel visioned and focused on what my goal was and wanting to push myself. I've always had coaches my whole life, like running coaches who have been like, don't you dare slack off. Like, you show up to training. I don't care how much you had to drink last night or whatever. So that took me up to age 18. And I signed up for university, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. Like, my high school really did revolve around running. Like, my family's holidays were Kayleen's running in Melbourne or Adelaide or Tasmania. Like, the whole family will just jump on her coattails and go on a holiday with her and watch her race. So I signed up for university. I just did sport and exercise science because my parents were like, off you go, you have to go to university. And I, there was nothing, I'd never even thought about it because I was the runner and people knew me as the best runner in the school. So when I got to university and I signed up for sport and exercise science, it was all science. And I was not that strong in science. It was like chemistry, biology, and I was on the track team. So that like made me go to university.
Yeah.
And then about halfway through, I was like, I'm out of here. Like, this is like not my vibe at all. And I actually had a vision. I wanted to work in summer camps in America.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of glamorized, you know, throughout, you know, pop culture and numerous movies that we were consuming as kids. So not that unrealistic want.
Yeah. I guess like probably even just had that realization then of always being like, I want to do what I love. Like I've never really envisioned myself. I guess that was the drive towards summer camps, is that it was, I can get paid to hang out with kids and, you know, all of that. And I didn't quite make it to America, but to get me out of university, my mum signed me up and said, oh, why don't you hit up the local school camp that was up the road and ask them for an apprenticeship? And they didn't have anything going. But I went and knocked on the door and said, I want an apprenticeship. I want to be an outdoor ed instructor. And they were like, well, we've already got one apprentice and we're not big enough to take on another. So they said, stay in touch. You know, he's nearly finished. So I just kept knocking on their door. And I remember after I'd worked there for about a year, the lady said to me, you were so persistent. That's why you got the job. And so eventually he wrapped it up and they signed me on, and I just, you know, became an outdoor ed instructor, you know, pretty much on the job without really finishing my qualification, but spent a year, you know, teaching kids to abseil and rock climb and bushwalking and kayaking and problem solving and all of that. And then in that year, I got, I think I was probably just a little bit depressed because I had moved 2 hours away from home to go to a sport excellence school so that I could do running as a subject at school. And so when I moved back to my parents' home, I'd lost contact with all of my friends. And, you know, actually I remember going to a party and everyone was just sitting around, doing all the things. And I remember just being like, I'd been at work all day and was like, is this all there is? Like, I remember so clearly. And I left the party and went home and was a bit depressed and just lost. I was 18 and my parents, mum said to me, hey, I'm organizing a youth group down at the church. Do you want to come with me? You know, kind of dragged me out of bed. And I was like, yeah, right. And I, you know, I was just naturally a good public speaker and, you know, and ideas, liked bouncing ideas. So I ended up going to this meeting with this other lady that she was running, who was a youth worker in a different school, and really got along with her. She was about 30 at the time. And she was like, come start coming to my youth group, you know, and all this stuff. And then I was like, okay. And, you know, for me, I just related to that. The people were older, they were really vibrant, you know, they were ambitious. And I just got swept up hard. Like, I just obsessed over it and was like, these are my people. And so I was going to this like really hyperactive Catholic church full of young people, and having been lost, felt like I'd belonged again.
Yeah.
And I think I was actually going through an injury, which meant I wasn't running as well. And they eventually asked me to sign up to do this volunteer program, which was National Evangelization Teams.
Yeah.
So I signed up for that, got accepted, and went to a 5-week training program and decided to, you know, quit everything and volunteer for the church for a year. So I had to raise $5,000. And yeah, this is also where my mindfulness stuff started, because I had been really lazy about raising. I had a deadline and I had not raised anything. And then I was like, mum, watch this. And she was really worried. She's like, you haven't raised your money. You're not going to be allowed to go. Like, yeah. And so I said to her, watch this. I'm going to go to church and ask the priest if I can speak this weekend. And I walked out of church that day with $5,000 of donations. I just remembered that, actually. And mum was like, who are you? Like, how the hell did you do that? I'm like, oh, public speaking, which is obviously now a career of mine.
Yeah.
But ended up in that church dynamic for 2 years. And for a moment there, I was studying, like, I love reading, I always have, and studied the, like, saints and nuns and, you know, was got really obsessive about the discipline of their lives and thought that I went and had stayed with some different orders of nuns for a few weekends and yep. contemplated whether I would just become celibate and be a nun. Some parents were like, oh my God, what is she doing now? Like, this was my next extreme.
It seems like you might have though had some, so with your interactions with the young kids previously in this sort of sports context and then in this faith-based youth group sort of context, it felt like so before you might have been attracted to that based on the coaching capacity and what you'd sort of grown up in and what you saw in yourself as in terms of leadership for the future. And then within this, you saw, I guess you'd recognize some similarities in obviously enthusiasm or a pursuit of something, yeah, that carried with it a positivity or a focus. And you mentioned about determination and discipline. I think it's really admirable to sort of look back on hindsight and see all these, I guess, these traits that were ingrained in you at these significant steps along the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And funnily enough, when I left those 2 years, like in my mind, it was like service to God and a fun thing to do and stuff. So when I left there and had to try and get a job because I'd been out of the workforce and hadn't studied and, you know, everyone was halfway through a degree and, you know, my parents were like, get home and get on with your life. Like, you can't keep volunteering. I hired a copywriter who eventually helped me write my first ever brand copy for Startup Creative. But she went through, I spoke to her about everything that I did in those 2 years, and it was stakeholder engagement, it was public speaking, it was motivation, like it was everything that I now do in my business. It just happened to be that I was doing it to recruit for the Catholic Church. And so she actually packaged up my skill sets to help me eventually write the copy for Startup Creative, which was my first, you know, my business now. So I look back on that time and, as you know, I had a, you know, significant coming out of when I started dating a woman and, you know, which has ended up in me leaving the church and having discrepancies there, obviously. But when I look back on that time, it was, you know, I was so energized. I was so confident. I was surrounded by other confident people. And I, you know, we were a bit of a shock to the system for young people in schools then, because we were these young, energetic, vibrant, fun, cool looking young people who were saying, hey, we also believe in God. And so we had a little bit of a shock factor. And as a result, it's like, that's where I practiced program development then, which is what I eventually led me to starting my business, because we had to design retreats. So we would have to design a 5-day retreat for the grade 12 students. Mm. And we had to decide on the journey of how to get them from coming in and wanting nothing to do with this religious retreat to understanding a concept and making it relatable to them that they could actually apply to their life, having them get, we would pick them at some sort of like significant, you know, emotional experience, and then equip them with the ability to go out and implement it into their life, which, you know, if I look at that now, I'm like, that's what I do as a business coach.
Well, yeah, true. I mean, actually, funnily enough, you were telling me just before, so your mum's done some of the hard work and unearthed some of your past resources and has found some interesting, I guess, categorizations of you along the way.
Yeah, so I love this topic. I was like, how interesting to actually be able to have the opportunity to sit back and reflect on to how you got to where you are. So I called mom and said, can you dig out my report cards? So I went through them all. She sent me grade 8 to 10, I think. Oh, there was some 5 and 6 in there. But it was my business is Startup Creative, right? And one of the my grade 8 English teacher said she has some creativity, and I was like, interesting. Look at me now, grade 8 English teacher. But other feedback was like my spelling and punctuation was horrible, which is quite ironic that I now run a magazine and I'm writing a book, and my whole life is content creation.
Yep.
My self-control was inconsistent. I thought that was interesting. My religion teacher said I had loyalty and commitment, which I think is like a massive part of my business. Like when I'm networking or I'm, you know, coaching, I'm like, yeah, I'm 100% committed. I was like, oh, that's good. Yeah. But overall, I was a pretty average student. I think that like I had zero absent days, but mostly because my mum worked at the school. So I wasn't an opportunity. I got a B in business. It said Kaylin has some business knowledge, but my behavior was always on top, and my public speaking, like I always had. And I look at that now, and I think behavior was always like on top, or like, you know, the higher end scoring. Because I was personable with my teachers. Like I look back on school and I, you know, remember making teachers laugh, or, you know, chatting with them in the playground and, you know, stuff like that. Like, so I think, you know, I look at public speaking and, you know, although I did get some feedbacks, one teacher said I was too chatty, which my girlfriend would relate to. Like she would definitely back you on that one.
Nothing wrong with it. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Wait, there was another really funny one in here. I got a intermediate, like I wasn't very good at something that was really relevant. I can't read where I wrote it. I'll have a think.
Well, how about, well, I might probe just a little bit on it. So you've outlined, I guess, a large part of your youth, and we'll dig into, I guess, a bit of your career or what you've fashioned into a career. But just based on your personality, like obviously throughout your youth and obviously how you approach things now, it's definitely a determination that's, look, I wouldn't say full on, but it is certainly driven to. But has that paralyzed you or fatigued you over the years? Have you had some real experiences where that maybe the expectations you've placed on yourself has caused or either burnout or maybe significant periods of self-reflection?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I just saw that. So the self-control was inconsistent. And I think like when I look at that, like my report cards and who I am now, it's like I was never really excelled in school as a determined, apart from in my sporting. And I think I look at that and I go, when I care about something and when I'm passionate about something and I see an end goal and I really want it, then you can't stop me. Like I am, you know, a bull at a gate, and watch me go.
Yep.
And, you know, I often get called a doer, you know, someone who's sort of like has an, I think you would be the same, I guess.
Yeah, I'm a doer.
Yeah, we're doer. Well, you know, I've made a business out of teaching people how to be doers, because, you know, what is innate in me, because it would cause pain in my body, and it causes pain when I watch other people have an idea and then not do anything about it, whether it is throwing an event or reaching out to someone or pitching an idea. Like I can't not see where I want to go and do it. But as a result, I definitely bite off more than I can chew. And when I'm in the real inspiration stage, I've got pages of stuff everywhere that is like ideas and to-do list, and I'm reaching out to people. And there's definitely been times where I haven't always followed through on that initial explosion because I don't stop and take time, you know, which is, I have, I'm rushing in English, was apparently some feedback, but, yeah, I just hit the ground running and can easily drop the ball because I've got so many, going, and the coaches that I've had in business and the personal assistants and, the feedback that I've had from people close to me have helped me with my business over the years have been like, stop, slow down, and let's do this properly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whilst it serves me, like my first ever magazine, I sat with a mentor and said, I want to run a magazine because I was hearing all of these really great stories. And he said, here's my graphic designer. She's just finished design school and has a dream for a design. She was a friend of his family. And here's my printer. I spend lots of money with them. So tell them I've sent you and they'll look after you. So I had a printer that quoted me $5,000, which felt achievable. Mm-hmm. I had a designer who went away and mocked up the first issue in 24 hours, just gave me some like mock-ups, and I loved the design. My girlfriend at the time was academic and a really good writer, as was two of our friends, and I found photographers on Instagram. And I had issue one from that first meeting to a launch party with 150 people, $5,000 of sponsorship and, you know, free beers and, you know, all of that in 9 weeks.
Yeah, right. Wow.
And, you know, then it just, I always said I'll just do one copy and to see where it goes. And, you know, within 24 hours, I got up from the launch party, which had a panel of speakers and all of these big posters on the wall, like I went overboard, and got up the next day, and it was 40 degree heat on the Gold Coast, and just started dropping. I had 2,500 copies that my girlfriend was like, get these out of the house, they stink, because it was fresh ink. And so I just started delivering them and dropping them at coffee shops and convincing people to let me, or just kind of sneaking them in the corner. Yeah. But the emails started 24 hours later of people saying, wow, thank you, I've just read this, I've quit my job and this has been so helpful. And so that's where that determination, and I think from, you know, being an athlete and, you know, probably just natural, you know, doer. Like, I think my parents never let us say can't as a kid. Mm. And, you know, there was a lot of self-responsibility in our house. We got ourselves to school and home from school. And if mum and dad were working late, we were on dinner duty. And in grade five, so I was 10, was riding to school with my five-year-old brother and signing him into his childcare for the day.
Yeah.
It serves me, but then there's also been times where I've taken on too much and I have not, I wouldn't say I've totally burnt out. I've been on the verge of it, but it doesn't happen as much anymore, but I used to get to a point where I would get tonsillitis or I'd be in bed for 3 days, just in total exhaustion, on the verge of like a depression, because I was so overwhelmed and had done too much. So.
Natural to experience. So I think obviously you've seen through the fuck up nights events and other things. It's actually not so much a common, but definitely a more spoken about feeling, and people can therefore associate their own feelings with people that speak openly about them. So that's why I guess the you know, relaying those types of experiences in the public forum can really help others.
Mm.
Let's do something. Let's go rapid fire through a bunch of jobs that you would have had after, let's say the youth group. So rapid fire through a bunch of jobs that you found yourself in, and let's end with your last step before you leapt into starting Startup Creative. So where'd you go after the youth group and you ended up in essentially corporate world?
Yeah. So I did finish the youth group. They actually offered me a job, which was a really shitty pay, and I would have to go and live in a city and not near the beach. And I actually said no to that job. And, you know, my parents were kind of like, you can do better than that. And then a friend of mum's put me forward to my role was campus minister. So I was 19 and I was the campus minister for a Catholic high school on the Gold Coast. I did that for 4 years and then came out gay, and the principal came to me and said, we've got word that you're gay, and if you're going to be out, then I can't save you. But the Archbishop knows, who's the head of the Catholic schools, and it advises, you know, upwards to the Pope, and he has asked me to take care of it. So if you want to be out, then you have to you're gonna have to find somewhere else. And I was like, I'll go somewhere else. So that was a massive transformational year. From there, I went to work in a school with kids at risk. So I worked, these kids had been kicked out of every other school. I was part of a team of four staff who were building this brand new, we'd been given a rundown school that wasn't in use anymore. We had about 20 students And my job was to write programs and try and A, motivate these kids to want to come to school, and B, teach them real basics in a creative way, because they couldn't sit still. A lot of them were addicts on drugs and alcohol. They were living on the streets because their parents had kicked them out. They were in and out of juvie. They couldn't write their name. They had very short attention spans. They had, you know, severe mental health, some of them. So my job was to try and teach them basic maths and English. And we would build like football fields and things like that. So, and they would have to measure the sidelines, and then we could prove that they could, you know, add up. I was there for a year, and it was just so high stress. Like, some of the kids would turn up really agitated because they'd been out on drugs all night, and they would come and punch holes, and we'd have to go into lockdown, and, you know, they'd turn up with knives, or gangs would turn up looking for kids who hadn't paid for drugs. So it was super high stress, and I decided to leave that job. It was a really difficult decision. There was a job opening at Queensland Council of Social Services, and having been on the front line with kids at risk, and, you know, I'd always had volunteer roles as well. So during those youth work years, I had set up a volunteering program for St. Vincent de Paul Society, and we had recruited 150 university and, you know, 20 to 30 year olds in the community to volunteer with kids who were living in shelters and just be their mate. So I'd done all of that and really felt like I understood the front line. And then, so I got a job with QCOS, and our job was to advise to the Queensland government the best practice for youth services in Queensland.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And then I did that for 12 months and realized there was no movement in what I thought was going to be a game-changing career and really help young people on the front line. It just was red tape and going around in circles, and nothing eventuated. Again, was close to burnout because I was commuting, and then decided to wrap up my program development skills into a how to turn your passion into a business career course, and went out and sold that to local councils, universities, some businesses, and that helped me to leave my job and start Startup Creative.
Amazing. Look, I knew some of this, but I guess packaged up with all the context behind it just makes so much sense, just to see that journey and, you know, wrapping up all these skills. I mean, a lot to say is about unconventional career paths. Entering the church or working with your youth groups are not unconventional things, but it's more that that amalgamation of skills and experiences that, you know, when told in totality, it all makes so much sense now in terms of what you wrapped up in, let alone the influence your parents have had in your local community that you emanated from. So that's amazing. It's a really fortunate thing to hear.
Yeah, thank you. And so just quickly, and amongst all of that, like, I obviously, when I came out gay and had really bad homophobia, I got really passionate about the LGBTIA Q+ community.
Yep.
And I'd always known that I had Aboriginal in me, but in and amongst my 20s, we finally got the documentation and the family history of it. So then I threw myself into mentoring Aboriginal young people as well. So I think, like, the common theme between running and church and LGBTIQ+ and businesses, that when I believe in something and I understand it and know it in my whole body, and, you know, I do that now with even mindfulness stuff, is I can't not act on that and make it a part of my life. And just so happens to be that we live in a world where I've been able to make a career out of it.
Yeah.
So I think I'm very extreme, and I believe this, and I'm going to rally other people around me to believe it and to live it as well.
Yeah, and we've had some significant times of late. I mean, we're having this interview during National Reconciliation Week. Idaho Day was just last week as well. How has, I guess, that sort of, let's say, support advocacy in your work, how is that sort of either manifested or starting to manifest in the future? I know that you had been involved with AIM for some time and then had some industry accolades as a result of that. So what does the future look like for you in that engagement work?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, being a Aboriginal lesbian woman in business gives me a nice
it's a niche.
That's a niche. That is really ticked all the boxes there.
Like when you've coupled that with the digital nomad
yeah,
podcast
creative entrepreneur,
that's right.
Who's a little bit of a hippie,
certainly find a niche from there.
I tick a lot of those niche boxes, but I think for me, when I came out gay and even when I really connected to my Indigenous heritage, I always looked for role models. Like, and, you know, even as a business now, you know, we're constantly looking for people. People and connections are so important to me. Like, I would choose that over a podcast or anything, you know, having a coffee or a beer with someone. And so for me, when I was looking for role models as a lesbian woman or an Indigenous young person, I then have realized that, okay, well, if I'm looking for that, then somebody else is looking for it. And if I can stand up and be an visible role model, then I can give hope to other people. And so, you know, especially now where we have built a social media following, to be able to use that platform to bring awareness to, you know, and to step up and say, I am a lesbian woman and I run this business as well. And reality is we do live in a world where some of those minority groups still a minority, and there is still stigma sometimes, not always, in some pockets. And so as scary as it was for me to say those things along the way and own it and step into it, I know that it's important because that was what I was looking for. And, you know, we hosted an event with General Assembly on LGBTIQ plus people in the workplace. And the thing that came out of it was how important awareness and role models were. Like, if, you know, it's statistically showing that people, it helps with their mental health if they can have someone who can reflect back to them that you can be successful, you can be out and proud and safe, and you know, here's an example, I'm going to show you that it can be done.
Yeah, amazing. I think it's really easy for people to assume that, you know, things might have been quite easy for you. An easy reference point would be a significant Instagram following, obviously, and social media presence. But sitting behind that, as you've referenced, is, you know, some real elements or experiences of, you know, some ostracism. And certainly your livelihood being taken away in terms of, you know, working within the group and just being told you're no longer welcome. But I would imagine that is incredibly harmful along the way, but also you have embraced that for, I guess, the next steps, which is, yeah, just really admirable. And it's, again, it's amazing to hear the context behind, you know, your journey along the way. But let's go into, because we've touched upon it and some of the audience won't be as familiar with what you have put together with Startup Creative. So you've been running it across a number of physical issues. I always love when people are pursuing things and also actually have a physical thing to hold in their hands. There's no, digital is still hard work, but geez, there's nothing like holding a physical product of your labor in your hands. And how has that also resulted in, throughout your career, in terms of other avenues? So you do podcasting, you do content creation, there's the coaching and then public speaking and so on. So what has Startup Creative been like for the last few years, and what is coming up next?
Yeah, so it started with a program. So it was how to turn your passion into a business, and that was based on the volunteer program that I had run. And the program itself won an award for getting that program off the ground, and it still exists today. So when I looked back on that, it was like, I know how to take an idea and make it a reality. So I decided to make that a course, and I sold that to funding bodies, really. Anyone who had money to invest in the development of young people. I remember sitting in a friend's pizza bar one Friday night, and and I remember having this thought process of, he's so lucky because my days were spent convincing someone to choose me as the provider over somebody else. And I was 23 and, you know, just kind of winging it. And when he was like, if I can make good pizza, I can put in a good vibe, people are going to come. And so that was the moment randomly that I went, I'm going to start going direct to my customer. And so that's when I focused on growing our Instagram. I started running my own workshops instead of selling them. So I had to take a pay cut because that first course, I would facilitate that for $10,000. So it took me, it was 6 weeks of facilitation, but it could be like a 3 month lead up to convince somebody to fund that. And then the payment terms. So it got rid of that nice chunk. But if I knew that if I focused on Instagram, digital marketing, I was learning a lot about business through stories. So the people who were in my community, there were so many young, creative people who didn't have business backgrounds, but had made these businesses that had lines out the door. So, you know, there was 11 mates on the Gold Coast who were just like surf rats who didn't like going to surf clubs, which was like the only place to get a beer on the Gold Coast. And they made this little like funky bar that had a hidden door, like very Melbourne. They all just chipped in 11 of them and made their dream bar. Another guy made a coffee shop. So the stories were the ones that that's how I learned most from business. And I think even looking at the Indigenous history, like people have always learned through storytelling and passing on stories and the wisdom of the elders. So when I came across these stories, I said, people need to know that businesses that are successful and that we admire and that we love aren't coming from people with lots of money who have MBAs and knew exactly what they were doing. Like these people's stories were like I was very much like, tell me about the times you fucked up. Like that has been my storytelling style from the beginning. And so I personally wasn't consuming blogs, and I've always loved print and books and paper and well-designed things. And when I went looking for business advice, there was nothing inspiring and beautiful to look at that you would want to leave on your coffee table or take a photo of. So that was my vision for Startup Creative Magazine. So we did issue one, which blew up, and then issue through 2 to 4, I did it with this same little designer on the Gold Coast. And then by around issue four, I had some investors come, and that's a whole nother story. That didn't work out. And then I went into business with Tess from Smack Bang Designs, and we did issue 5 together, which is the nice thick version, and we got that stocked and in bookshops around Australia.
Yep.
Virgin Australia lounges.
Virgin Australia, I was just going to say, it must be quite a bit of a pinch me moment to wander through an airport and sort of see yourself, again, the fruits of your labour just sort of stop there.
Yeah, that was a big win. So it just became telling stories, which is the podcast. And then I've always loved public speaking, and I know that learning is so much easier sometimes when you're in person. So throwing on workshops, and I think the common theme has been design and making it beautiful, like, you know, similar to you and how you do events, like, how often, you know, wasn't that long ago. I know when I started 5 or 6 years ago, any sort of business networking event was bougie as fuck, with people just jamming fucking business cards down your throat. Everyone was in suits just pitching their startup without even asking your permission to hear. Yeah. And they were all like in grey rooms with, you know, shitty catering and no windows and boring speakers. So, you know, similar to where Fuck Up Nights and Creative Mornings and all of those began, is like, hey, we don't want to be in a bougie room. We want to be with creatives in, you know, an inspiring space, having a beer, like what we would do without.
Yeah. We want to connect with people, and we want to see ourselves in others, so that we, you know, as happy as we are to remain autonomous or do our own thing, we like to know that we're not alone by the same token. That's amazing. I've really loved observing along the journey. It was funny. I was observing before we got to know each other. So then it's always quite surreal. And it's a nice way of, I guess, breaking down, you know, different cities as well, being that you were predominantly interstate-based, and then all of a sudden you've landed here in Melbourne, spent some time in New York and other places around the world as well, and now we're chatting from your where you hold up in Byron Bay. So
yeah. I think that's the beauty of it, right? Like, again, you know, what I believe in is what I... have built my life and my activities around. And when I started learning about business, the bougie networking scene said, prepare to live off 2 minute noodles and work long hours and not be in a relationship. And I was like, absolutely not. Like my reason for leaving the 9 to 5 was because I wasn't living life. Like I was wasting it away in a job. So I have done from day one that my life would be, that my business would be to serve the life that I wanted to live. And so when I started going to a lot of personal development and reading things like the 4-hour work week and then eventually getting into mindfulness stuff that, you know, Joe Dispenza's work, he, you know, talks about creating from the quantum field and, you know, which is a whole nother level. But have, as a result, have tried to stay away from that hustle mentality and ensure that I have a quality of life and that my business is serving my happiness as well.
You've gravitated, you've certainly leaned into mindfulness or advocacy for mindfulness and I guess the plasticity your mind can incorporate in letting this sort of mindfulness practice in and how it shapes your focus, your direction and everything. Was it difficult at the start as you became more curious to see how that would manifest in your actual work, or has it been some real light bulb moments over time where maybe it's that you're handling situations differently, maybe you're inherently calmer or not as exhausted when you get to whatever we might call a weekend. But was it immediate, the feeling as you started to incorporate it in your life, or have you seen this gradual influence?
Yeah, no, I think I'd always, I guess, even coming from a religious background, had always had some level of like there's more to life than just this 3D reality. So I've always had some connection to a spiritual, you know, life that I was brought up with and threw myself into. So there was there, and then I did fall away from any sort of concept of God or spirituality when I went through the homophobia and I was really angry at it. But I knew that on some level, I started going to yoga and, you know, and I remember putting in a meditation class in my diary on Monday mornings, and it was in my diary as a reoccurring event for about 2 years, and I never went to a class. And then I threw my partner at the time, actually, we got into a lot of tantra work, which is sacred spirituality, which, you know, kind of through the yoga scene. Yep. And realizing how big a role that played in, you know, life force energy, that led me to Dr. Joe Dispenza's work, which is all about neuroplasticity and neuroscience and, you know, quantum field. And it was that work that when I read his book, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself, for me, it was that meditation, I could apply it. Like I never felt being a doer. I never bought into the idea of being a yogi. Like I guess I had assumed that a yogi removed themselves from the world and went and meditated over there for no reason at all. And someone who finds it hard to slow down, I was like, why would I do that? But as the Joe Dispenza stuff teaches, it's like you're actually changing your reality and becoming the better version of yourself through this practice. So when I could see why and the outcome, and I actually started applying it to my business. So I would meditate on opportunities coming and making money and all, you know, things happening. And I started seeing a direct, like I've read that book in 2 weeks. I started meditating 2 hours a day and I started making really good money really quickly, which felt really easy. Yeah. And just my mind felt more open and opportunities were arising. And over the years, I think diving into that work and then coming across other experts in this space, and I think some like elite athletes have always inspired me as well, because I think they're a Same. Beautiful example of people who have a determination and a goal and don't stop until they get there. But what I found is that like this whole idea of success in business, it doesn't matter how good your business plan is. If you have a limiting belief that you're not good enough, or that, you know, you might fail, or that's a big risk to take, or no one's going to take you seriously, or you can't afford it, then you're actually, that doesn't matter what the plan is. You're not going to get it off the ground. So I guess what I've come to believe over the years is that mindfulness and mastering your mind and your habits and everything that comes from your neuro pathways is the key to success. And I'm still figuring it out in myself, but I'm starting to weave it more into my business model, because I don't think you can have a business plan and a goal without also trying to understand and crack your own human anatomy to ensure you're performing at your best ability. And, you know, I think Tony Robbins and Tim Ferriss and Jim Quick, like there's some guys out there who, like Tim Ferriss is a good one. I don't follow him that closely anymore, but what I admire about him is how can I crack this human? What do I have as a human that can make me elite, that can stand out? And how do you crack your biology? And when you really dive into mindfulness stuff, it's not about removing yourself. For some people perhaps, and sitting on a mountaintop and meditating, but you can use it to become the best version of yourself and have really great success.
Amazing. Yeah, no, I love that. Well, look, I think if anyone's going to follow along, they're going to inevitably find out what you sort of vouch for or advocate for. So certainly check out Dr. Joe Dispenza's work, etc. But look, let's leave it on that point, because we've quickly got into the end of time. But I want to ask you one last question. It is a little bit around information, but it's information gathering, I guess, for others that you would both coach but also guide. People will happily want to pick your brain about how to do what you do, or you know, find out things like you do. You know, we ran an event earlier this year together that came out of nothing, and very much indicative of all you sort of said. It was a nothing idea that quickly became something. We nearly killed ourselves in the process getting it done, but we were fundamentally talking about at a very disheartening time in Australia, like a number of bushfires occurring, and serious questions about obviously our, you know, the future of our climate, particularly within Australia. And so I think that one thing that we got out of the event was, I guess, the onus on all of us to, you know, our base level responsibility is to get educated, I guess, about the world we live in and what's going on. So both in terms of a higher concept world that we live in, but then also how you know what's going on within the ecosystem in which you operate. How do you source information? What are you most looking for, and what are you retaining the most, according to, I guess, your habits?
Yeah, I mean, I tend to read a lot of books. Like I personally love just reading and consuming and keep adding to my mind and my reference system for my brain, so that, you know, I see it as like your brain is a library, and if you can you can feed it with more knowledge, even if you're unconsciously consuming that knowledge, it's still going to reference it at some point because it's going in there. I tend to have really good networks. Like you would be one of my good networks, Gaz, and having people who are close knit and that you check in with, and that you're constantly bouncing ideas with, and, you know, keeping your finger on the pulse. I think that's a game changer, because then, you know, you don't need too many people. You can have a handful of like-minded people that you'd want to have a beer with anyway, who are on the same path as you. And, you know, if there's five of us, that you've got five of them around you, I'm keeping an ear out for opportunities and things for you, and you're doing the same for me. You know, things start to flow in pretty easily in terms of like information and understanding the world around me. I'm signed up to a few email lists. Like I try not to consume too much, because I actually also want to be an opinion thought leader. So if I can, you know, have my opinion on it, then it's not tainted too heavily. But I'm on a handful of mailing lists of that kind of deliver some fast news, and follow a few good Instagram accounts, which, you know, you stop and listen to. So I guess like my stuff is very mindful, and so I do like Jim Quick, who's a bloody legend with the mind stuff, Mel Robbins, who's all about motivation and, you know, beating procrastination. I'm really loving the holistic psychologist at the moment on Instagram. If you're not following her, very much about rewiring and undoing your patterns that keep you small. But I think like my number one is networking and conversations and connection, and you know, making an effort to get out and to check in with people, connect with people, and be at events and things
when being present. And it doesn't need to be exchange heavy, does it? It's just simply remembering, you know, a network, all this emphasis of networks only matters if you do something with it.
Yeah.
So I guess putting yourself out there, but by the same token, just being invested in what's going on just pays dividends in ways that you don't really know why, but it's always beautiful to see it manifest into something in the future.
Yeah. I mean, my book deal came from having a Aperol spritz with a publisher by accident at a friend's 30th birthday lunch.
Yeah.
You know, I ended up at a table and, you know, obviously left an impression and talked about my business in a way that she reached out the next day and said, I've got an idea for a book. Would you like to write it? And, you know, that comes from being a good person and, you know, being nice and relatable, I think. And but I also look at that situation. I'm like, get up and do the work and show up every day, even if no one's paying you for it. And if you create yourself as the expert, then people will relate and, you know, and start to plug things in and be like, you know, this podcast is an example of being like, hey, I think you'd be great for this. Or you've connected me around the world with great things. So yeah, if you be a good person and want to have genuine connections, then people will slot opportunities into your life because
that's right,
they know what you stand for.
Yeah, but there's no better sentiment to leave on. So look, thank you once again. I really appreciate it. It's very heartening and I really enjoy hearing the backgrounds of people's lives. So this has been A Lot to Say with Kayleen Langford. Do check out her Instagram. It's at Startup Creative on Instagram and also Facebook, and Kayleen Langford on Twitter, I believe, as well. But regardless, do check it out online as well, the website, and there's a number of resources for you to dip into. But Kayleen, once again, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So that was episode 5 of A Lot to Say podcast with Kayleen Langford. It was an absolute pleasure. I just thoroughly enjoy chatting to Kayleen whenever I interact with her, and her energy, it's absolutely infectious. Just can't fault it. And it's no accident that she, you know, just that magnetic personality attracts people to everything she puts out there. So really pleased to have her involved. So once again, you can follow along with Kayleen on the social media channels at Startup Creative. And on Twitter, it's at Kayleen Langford. It was my absolute pleasure to have her involved. So do check out all the things she's been involved in. And I've been your host, Gary Williams, or Gaz, as many people call me. Thanks a lot for joining. The music on the podcast is by my old band, Bateman, actually. And thanks to our mate, Gareth Leach, from Gareth Leach Music. He's programmed that little ditty intro and outro. You can follow along with A Lot to Say on the Alts Projects social media channels at Alts Projects. For now, thanks again for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode. This has been Alts Projects, A Lot to Say podcast, exploring unconventional career paths and the projects that consume us. Cheers.